You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. I got a little cold, Rob. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I'm glad we're sharing food right now, too.
Well, they're chicken wings. You can take them individually. It's not like we're sharing a burger.
We're dipping in the same bowl, though.
Today's guest is a friend of mine, more like a mentor, a father figure, if you will. He's been through a lot in his life and pretty dynamic career. Henry Winkler. You might know him as the Fonz. He's been in a lot of Sandler movies. He's got a great show called Barry. He just won an Emmy.
Yep, it's on HBO.
The show's killing it. He's one of the, I think if you ask anybody in the business who the nicest guy is, they will say Henry Winkler. 9 times out of 10. He's the guy.
Well, they might say Jesus.
In the industry? Is Jesus in the industry?
Yeah.
Inside of You is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, ADT. Rob, I have ADT. It's a home security system.
Yeah, you're a paranoid guy.
Well, I have a dog. I have a large dog. I have tall gates. I have with spikes at the top. I have a bat next to my bed. I've seen a lot of horror movies. And to top it all off, I want to be protected. So what do? I get ADT system.
So does it make you feel better? You feel better having an alarm system?
One time, for some reason, one of my friends, dipshit friends, didn't close the front door all the way. And I woke up at 3 in the morning. I guess a gust of wind blew the door open because it wasn't locked. Mm-hmm. And the alarm went off. And I was freaking out. I was naked. I didn't know what to do. And, I went downstairs. I didn't have time to put clothes on. And within a few minutes, guess who's there?
ADT?
ADT was there. They came. And I was like, I don't know what happened. I was scared. I was, somebody left the door open, I guess. But they were there. And, I just felt really safe. I've had them for many, many years. ADT will set up your home with multiple smart home devices and security features like indoor, outdoor cameras, locks, lights, garage door control, even video doorbells, all controlled from the ADT app or the sound of your voice and backed by 24/7 protection. Explore the vast number of things you can do with your secure smart home. Rob?
Yeah, you can set up custom automations unique to your home. To automatically do things like lock the doors and set the thermostat.
Oh, I need that. Yeah, that sounds good.
Even close your garage door from virtually anywhere.
You can control your smart home with the ADT app or the sound of your voice. Don't worry about installing and configuring your system. ADT will
do it for you.
That's right. Visit ADT.com/smart to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.
Yeah, be just like Michael and go get an ADT system.
Damn right. Let's get inside of Henry Winkler.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience. We're with Henry Winkler, Henry Franklin, Delano Winkler.
Not Delano, but I was named after the president. My parents escaped Nazi Germany. They're immigrants. If they didn't get to stay here, I wouldn't be here.
That's true.
Yeah. And I was named after the president at the time.
Because they were proud of what he did. He got us out of the war. Yeah. He got us, right.
Well, also, he was just like a thoughtful, calming, wonderful man.
I think you're insinuating something.
I'm not saying
we don't have to get political, Henry.
I'm not.
We don't need to.
I'm not in.
Well, but I could sense something.
I was only
there.
Talking about my namesake.
Yes. And your parents moved over here in 39, right?
And they didn't move. They escaped.
They escaped.
Nazi Germany.
They immigrated to the United States.
Yes. And then they had to keep asking the government for extensions that they got. The reason I know this is because I just found a box filled with papers from that time. And I just finished shooting the second season of Better Late Than Never.
Wow.
With Bill Shatner, George Foreman, Terry Bradshaw, and Jeff Dye.
You went on tour. How was that?
Our second season. First season was Asia.
Right.
Pretty great. I had to eat pork vagina.
Come again?
Yeah. That was on the menu.
We
went into a yakitori restaurant, famous for
yakitori,
grilled meat. And I said, "This is bumpy. What exactly am I eating?" And I called over the grandma who owned the establishment. Now this year, she told me it was pork vagina. And this year, we went to Germany, Lithuania, Spain, Sweden, and Marrakesh.
So I want to go back because I like to kind of get to know you. By the way, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you today, Henry.
Well, here's the thing, Michael.
Yes.
You and I know each other a long time.
I want to talk about that.
We don't always see each other.
We don't.
But I have a great deal of affection for you.
I feel the same way.
Okay.
I wrote that in my notes.
You did.
That I haven't looked at.
Well, now we've spoken about it. You can move on.
Well, no, there's more to
that. Who listens to this? Do you know how old your audience is?
Well, you know, I think a lot of them in the beginning are my fans or fans that just support me. And
yeah.
I hope.
So they're in their 40s?
Well, I'd say anywhere from 25 to 40, 30 to 45, 50.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping, you know, now we'll have 55 to 60.
72.
We met on a show called
did.
The Justin Adler Project.
Which started off really funny.
Really funny.
And evolved and then or devolved into less than oatmeal.
Well, what happened was it was a half hour drama. It was a single cam, which means there's one camera shot like
right.
a movie every week.
By the Russo brothers.
Right. Well, they weren't even attached then, right?
No.
They weren't even directing. They fired the creator on
yes.
the show.
Oh, my God.
Then they fired the writers.
Yes.
Or I guess he was the writer.
He was the writer and his wife. And his wife wrote, at that time, Arrested Development.
And she loved you, and she put you on that show. Now, we had a great cast. We had John Michael Higgins.
Yes, very funny.
Very funny. We had Missy Pyle, who came aboard.
Very funny.
Very, very funny people.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun, but then it went from great to hell.
It went from great to nothing.
I've heard from millions of people, not millions, that's an yeah. exaggeration, but everyone says Henry Winkler is the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
You've never seen him mad. He's the most generous.
Yes.
I couldn't believe, with all the hell we went through,
right.
how you never freaked out, Henry. You never flipped out. We had a 24-hour pilot shoot. Do you remember the last
I
day?
I do.
You do. How could you forget that?
I do. There was a duck that was running around, right? Or a goose.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, here's the thing.
How do you do it?
Well, first of all, gratitude. I just love being alive. Number two, I like being alive on this particular planet.
Good.
Number three, I love my job. I mean, I love my job. And if we get angry, if we freak out, you lose the big picture of trying to get this particular pilot or whatever it is on the air. All this creative energy goes into what? Nothing. Because no one is going to listen to you yell anyway.
But do you remember I got upset and you had to calm me down a little bit?
Okay. And then you got calm and we continued.
But I did lose it. And I remember, not lose it, but I remember just being told what to do in a certain way that I felt like, you know, felt like the old days with my father yelling at me, or it was
right.
condescending, whatever it was.
Who did that? I did that?
It was one of the Russos. You would never do that.
One of the Russos.
And I remember you said, Michael, just breathe. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's going to pass.
It's going to go.
And somehow.
And here we are. And we're on the radio on your podcast.
It's things can be better.
Really?
And what did those guys end up doing?
I don't have any idea.
Captain America's.
Oh.
Blockbusters.
Yeah, big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
cute little guys.
Shouldn't have fought with them. They were. I liked one of them, I think.
Yeah. I liked them both.
Of course you did.
I never worked for them again.
But you used to send
me. Hey, you know what? I'm not that crazy about them.
Yeah,
it just dawned on me.
Yeah, why did they call you? You were
really?
A pleasure.
I was nice.
Yeah, I'm the ass.
Yeah. God.
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
So you're
I look good in tights.
Do you look good
I
in
do.
Tights? You did a lot of productions where you were in tights?
None. One for my son, Max, mm-hmm. the director.
You got in tights.
Yes.
How old were you when you got in tights?
I was in my 40s because he was in school. He was at USC Film School.
Right.
And we were on the beach with a young actor named Armin Weitzman. You know Armin?
I want to say I do. I know the name Weitzman.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
And I was playing some sort of older Peter Pan. And I was in green tights in the middle of the beach.
Were you concerned about your package in front
well,
of
you? Well, no, you just grin and bear it. It's your son.
Are you proud of it, your package? And your son?
Wait, of my particular package?
Sure. Not the whole package, but some of the package.
Well, I like the whole package.
You do? Good.
Yeah. That particular part of my package,
right.
it works very well. I've got
three children. Yes.
I've got five grandchildren. You know, it just keeps going. It's nice.
You were born in 45 at
I was.
The end of the war.
Yes. My parents came over here in 39.
Right, when I guess that's when the Nazis invaded Poland, yes, around that time, right? Right.
Yes, and I was born in New York City.
And your father came over here and he smuggled in, I want to say smuggled, but he had these chocolates, but they were the family jewels. It was the only thing he had that was worth any money.
That is exactly right. His mother's jewelry and the jewelry he gave his wife, my mother, he encased them in chocolate, put them in the box of chocolate, put a ribbon around it.
Did they look at the chocolates? Did they open the chocolates?
They never opened the chocolates.
They never opened the chocolates.
No, they opened everything else.
And how much money at that time you think was in that box?
That's a good question. I don't know.
But enough to do what with?
Enough to pawn them and start his life in New York City.
Right.
Yeah.
And within 5 years, I guess it's 1944, he realizes, let's celebrate, sweetheart. Your mother's name, Elsie?
Ilsa.
Ilsa.
Ilsa Anna Marie.
Ilsa Anna Marie.
Yeah.
And she, I guess, the war was going well. The Germans were starting to lose. Stalingrad, right, and all that. They were getting cold, you know, wintered out. And they decided to have sex.
Yes.
Right at the end of the war. And you were born right at the end
Finally.
Of the war.
Let me tell you, that was a long... Frustrating. That was frustrating for them.
So, I know you've talked about this ad nauseum, but like I like to get inside of you. I like to talk about, because you talk openly.
Well, you know what's
like,
really interesting is one of the episodes of Better Late Than Never this year is my finding my roots in Berlin.
Really?
Yeah.
And you go there.
I do. We went there. Bill Shatner, George Foreman, Terry Bradshaw, and Jeff Dye.
Was it emotional?
Well, I'll tell you that it was life-changing.
Life-changing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't have a great relationship with your parents. And
I did not.
I think this is, I remember we had lunch at Kate Manolini's.
Ooh, doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't exist, but you love that place.
I like the sandwich.
Yeah, that sandwich with the, what is it? What's in that?
Mayonnaise, turkey, coleslaw, Russian dressing, I believe.
Was it a jelly, a cranberry?
It might have been a cranberry, and no crust.
Right, delicious.
And there was a name for it.
And a pickle. There were those little pickles.
Yes.
What are little pickles called?
Gherkins?
Gherkins,
or... I want to say aubergine, but that's...
That's a big word.
That's a color.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know.
Yeah. Aubergine.
But I remember you opening up, and I was... Frankly, I didn't know you very well, other than you were an icon, and you were great to work with, and you were supportive. But when I sat down with you,
yeah,
I started telling you about my family.
Right.
I wasn't even... It was unbeknownst to me that you came from a dark sort of upbringing.
Yeah.
And I started telling you, you know...
And I mean, like, you know, figuratively, too, and not just literally, the apartment was dark.
It was?
Yeah, I grew up in.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It was dark.
Dark.
A bad area?
No. Just Broadway in 78.
Right.
Just New York City.
Just lacking light.
Just lacking light.
Right.
Yeah.
So you opened up and I started telling you, you know, my dad's never really said, I love you. He was always like, you know, hard on me. And what's funny is I don't know if I was dyslexic and maybe, who knows if I am a little.
Yes.
But I knew that I was colorblind as a kid.
Right.
And I didn't know it till later in life, till like I was 15,
right,
16 years old. So I was getting very bad grades, not all because of colorblindness.
Yeah.
But I remember in our class and these people always thought I was stupid.
Yeah.
I remember being in Gus Derner Sports in
but
Indiana.
But you know what? That tragedy still goes on today.
Sure.
One out of five children have some sort of learning challenge.
Yeah.
That's why my partner and I write our children's books.
Lynn.
Yeah. We're writing the very last Hank Zipser.
Whoa.
Right now.
Well, how many have you written?
The 34th.
Why is the 34th the last?
Because we have decided with the publisher that it was time to move on.
I find this fascinating how you didn't, you're dyslexic growing up.
Right.
Your dad's.
I didn't know until I was 31.
I don't know. I mean, look, it's hard growing up in general and going
yes,
to school
is.
And other
yes,
kids.
Yes, it is.
Were you not a cool kid?
No.
At all?
No.
Were you picked
I
on?
Had to wear an overcoat in August in Manhattan with only window air conditioning. You know those units?
Yeah.
If I called a girl, I had to put on an overcoat because I shook so much.
What was that? Where did that stem from?
Lack of self-confidence.
Do you think that you still have some of that today?
Yes. Less, I must say... Less. I have finally now, you know, when they say youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah.
They're not kidding. I wish I knew then what I know now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I came from a family where, my dad was 14, 20 SATs, really smart. My mom was
smart.
What
did he do?
he was I work in pharmaceuticals, and mm-hmm. he was a plant manager. My mom wrote articles, and I just remember
articles about what,
like sports articles or articles that were happening, you know, things that were happening in the community in Indiana.
Wow.
But I just always felt my grades were bad.
Right.
I read that you used to celebrate when you got a C.
Yeah.
That's what I used
to do. I threw myself a party.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I just felt.
It was a very small party. I had one noisemaker and a hat.
It was the shaking you were doing underneath.
I'm telling you.
But, you know, I remember feeling like my brother's the smart one. My dad's closer to him. I'm the dumb one. My dad's teaching me math. Again, I read something, and the parallels were crazy.
Yeah.
Your dad teaching you math. My dad could do calculus back and forth and
my
geometry.
My father spoke 11 languages.
And why can't you do this? Why can't you do this? And I just never had a lot of confidence. So how did I become an actor? And I think it's because I got on stage. Somehow I did it, and somebody said,
when did you know that you wanted to be an actor?
You know, I was sort of forced to do a play in high school because I was in drama class.
See, I couldn't be in a play in high school because my grades were so low.
You had to have good grades to get in.
Yeah.
Well, my grades weren't great either, but I was in drama class.
I couldn't do extracurricular. But anyway, when did you know? So you were forced to do a play.
Well, I was taking drama class, which was an easy A.
Right.
You know, drama class. What do you do? You do nothing. The teacher does nothing. It's drama class. So she said, Michael, I'm not letting you take drama senior year.
Unless
you audition for a play.
Gotcha.
I auditioned for Grease. I got the part. I was Vince Fontaine, the DJ. I was scared shitless.
Right.
To the point where I was in the DJ booth, and they go, Michael, you have to move towards the so people can see you. I was so nervous. And I remember after the play, somehow I got the confidence just to do it. I'm telling you, I still remember the lines because I was so nervous. A popular kid the next day at school, I'm walking down the hallway, says, hey, you were really funny last night. And it was that moment I thought, not being me is better than being me.
Huh.
So that's, I think, why I started getting acting, because I felt like people are accepting me when I'm someone
else. You know what is funny about that? Being me, being, you know, the straight guy is almost impossible for me. I am a character actor. I'm not a leading guy.
That's hard to believe.
It's true, though.
You see some
I'm just telling you it's true. It's not hyperbole. It just is true.
You couldn't do it?
No, I could not. I had to have a hook. Sir Laurence Olivier, he built a nose out of putty for the character before he could become the character. His nose came first, and then everything else came. And
so he did that because he wasn't comfortable with himself. He wanted to be a
that's
character.
That's how he. No, I think that he did that. He found himself, or he found the character through changing the look of his nose into a nose of the character. And that's the hook. That's his hook. When I went in on an audition for the Fonz, I changed my voice a little, changed my body. That was my hook. And I got the part.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So you couldn't be yourself.
I could not be myself. Still, almost today, it's hard to do it. I'm on a new show with Bill Hader for HBO called Barry. And,
love Bill Hader. I think he's one of the funniest guys in the world.
Well, he's a genius.
Did you ever see his Keith Morrison from Dateline impression?
I've seen it all.
Oh, my God. He's a genius, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you had to find the hook to become the character.
I think when I shaved my head as Lex Luthor for Smallville, I was scared out of my mind. I was like, they're not going to take me seriously. I'm a goofball.
You shaved your head for the audition?
No, I didn't. But when I got it, I thought they'd fire me. And when they shaved my head in the makeup trailer, I sort of felt like, I'm different right now.
Right.
I'm not me. And that helped me play the part.
Yeah.
It helped me play into it. So
it's
amazing. I do understand that.
You know, there's a whole acting technique, Commedia dell'arte, which is from Italy in the 1700s or maybe even earlier, where they put on a mask and you stand in front of the mirror with an exaggerated mask, not a rubber mask. Either it covers the top part of your face or the bottom part of your face. And you just silently stand in front of the mirror. And all of a sudden, your body changes. A voice starts to come. And the face forces you to become a character. It's a great exercise for any young
actor. And
you've
done this.
I have done that in school. And then the hook, the baldness, the changing of the voice. That's all the mask.
Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your bestseller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
What I'm trying to figure out is Henry Winkler as this young kid in front of a girl wearing a trench coat, shaking underneath, scared.
On the phone. Not even in front of the girl.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just...
I was so nervous.
Now, how old are you at this point?
I am 15, 16.
Was there any love in the family? Was there any affection? Was your mother affectionate?
Well, I loved our dog.
What was your dog's name?
Dervin. An Irish setter that my mother gave away.
Why did your mother give the dog away?
She didn't like dogs.
Did it break your heart?
It broke my heart. Yeah.
How old were you?
How old was I then? 10.
Did she understand how much this dog meant to you?
I don't think it mattered, and I don't think she understood. But be that as it may, we now have incredible dogs.
Sure.
Yeah. You have Irv.
I have Irv.
Who I've known for many, many years.
You give me these random texts, Henry, where it's just, Michael, I'm thinking of you.
Yeah.
Irv, your brother Eric, love you. I hope you're well.
Yeah.
It's enough to, when I
and
see
now
those.
And now I've met your sister.
Well, that's not my sister. That's my assistant.
Oh, your assistant.
Not my assistant. That's my sister.
I heard your sister.
But, Rob, that's my sister.
Yeah.
That was my assistant, Jessica.
She's a lovely person.
I met your sister. Yeah, my sister's in Indiana. She's getting married for the fourth time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're this young
kid. So your family is really screwed to the wall.
Oh, yeah. My mom is in her third marriage. My dad just divorced his second wife.
Wow. You're not married.
Are you shocked that I'm not married?
No, I'm not shocked.
Maybe that's
however, I think if you ever decide that that is a route you want to go, I think that you are so filled with energy and life, I think it would be delightful.
Do you think I'd be a good father?
I do think you would be a good father. You are unbelievable with your dog.
Yeah, I love my dog.
And when you have a child, from the second before that child is born, you're kind of like, oh my God, I'm scared out of my mind. The second that child is born, that comes out and you hear the cry, something unlocks in you that is indescribable. It has no language.
Unconditional, this is my life. That's it.
It's no matter how frightening it is, you figure, I can do this.
By the way, I look back and I believe in forgiveness. I really do. And I think the only way to move on is to forgive. And I think you've probably, do you forgive your parents?
I do. Who do you forgive?
My dad was 18 when he married my mother, who was 23 with two kids, a 5 and a 7-year-old, had me a year later. He was a hippie. He had no job.
Right.
It was kind of hell. And I can imagine having a child that young.
Right.
And so a lot of things that he might have done wrong, or his lack of affection or whatever, there's certain things.
Did you see him have affection for your mother?
At times, I did.
Really?
And I think there became some passive aggression where it was like, my mom always needed attention, and aren't I great? Aren't I pretty? And my dad, it became sort of, yeah, you're beautiful. Yeah, we all know you're great. It became this weird dynamic.
Gotcha.
And it got kind of ugly. And,
yeah.
And I also just, I never confided in my family. I never could go to them with a secret.
No, I never did.
I never felt like I could trust them. If they're listening to this, I love you. I just couldn't trust you.
No, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, listen, the truth is the truth.
The truth is the truth.
Right, you've forgiven them.
Yeah, I have forgiven
them. Is there anybody outside your family you've forgiven?
I forgive Hans for Rich Rhodes for punching me in the face.
You do? Yeah, when was that?
I called him some bad names. That was in high school, and he was he was mad because my dad called his dad a fat ass.
Right.
And then he,
took it out on you?
He followed me home after a basketball game, and I told him, I was always good with comebacks.
Right.
I was always the funny guy.
Yes.
So I was little and insecure.
Right.
But when someone said something, I always popped him with something, and everybody laughed, and then he felt like they had to punch me in the face.
But this guy popped you.
He pumped me in the face, and my teeth were crooked, and then I ended up getting veneers, and that's what happened.
Gotcha.
Long story longer.
Do you know him?
No, I don't even know what's going on with him. I haven't seen him since high school. Right. He was a great, great hockey player.
Terrific.
So, how the hell did you get into acting if you're like this insecure kid who can't even talk to a girl on the phone?
Dreamt about being an actor every minute I was alive.
Why? What did you see that said,
I have no idea. If people were born to do something, I was born to try to be an actor.
But nothing inside,
I have no idea. I'm telling you the honest truth.
How did you know an actor existed? You saw movies.
Yes. I went to the movies at the Beacon Theater, which is now on Broadway, and is a theater of live performances. Like Carol Leifer was just there.
Right. And what movies do you remember seeing? I love that
movie. Oh, Comanche, Apache, a lot of Indian and cowboy
movies. I noticed.
Movies.
Yeah, sure.
War films, Rose Over Tokyo, I think that was called. Yeah.
Right.
Something like that.
So how old are you now? You're going to try an audition for college? You applied to 28
colleges? I applied to a lot of colleges.
And you got into two?
I got into two. One of them I never heard of since, Park University in Missouri.
Right.
If anybody has gone there, write Michael, let me know.
Let me know.
Yeah.
Barbara?
Yeah.
Barbara, you do that?
I was just wondering if there was a Barbara out there.
I bet there is.
A Tiffany.
Barbara told me she'd be on the show, Barbara Eden. Did you ever date Barbara?
Never.
She's a lot older than you.
I think I dated one actress.
Oh, please.
Cindy Williams.
Come on. Yeah. How old were you when you dated Cindy?
I was doing the Fonz. She was phenomenal.
She was gorgeous. I remember having a crush on her.
She is a wonderful
Laverne and Shirley.
She's great. Yeah.
Fantastic. I remember saying, oh my God, this woman is beautiful.
Yeah. She's a great actress.
And funny.
Could do anything. Her talent is limitless, truly.
And do you keep in touch?
I have seen her over the years every once in a while.
Is it weird?
Never. Never
How
weird.
Long
She's
did you
a
date?
Warm person.
How long?
I would say less than a year.
That's pretty amazing.
A year or less.
Were you in love?
I liked her a lot. I don't know that I was capable at that time in my life of being in love.
Right.
I think I was very closed off. If you thought of my center as a kernel, my emotional center, not to get heavy here, but
get heavy.
Is covered like Chernobyl with just tons of cement. I've spent since that time jackhammering the cement away.
Still to this day.
I think of myself as a block of Swiss cheese, and I'm filling in all of the holes in order to become cheddar.
I agree. I feel the same way.
No, it's okay.
To be completely
being
honest
a human
with you.
Being, it's the human condition.
I was on the plane last night coming home from Dublin, and I was on the plane.
Why were you in Dublin?
I was doing one of those conventions.
No, in Dublin?
Talking to some fans and seeing them and signing and stuff.
Signing in Dublin?
Amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Oh, my God. I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, it was called the Dublin Comic Con.
Wow.
Yeah, I did one in London. So every once in a while,
I've done them
very fortunate to be able to, they send me all over to do these things. So I'm very blessed.
I have to say, I love Comic Cons.
You do?
I do.
Why is that?
Because I stand on the other side of the table. I don't sit behind the table. And then I look at each person that comes up and I look them in the eye. These people are fans. I exist because they watch.
Agreed.
If they did not watch pay the money to go to the movies or come to the theater,
you wouldn't be on my podcast.
That's exactly right. I wouldn't be driving the car I'm driving. I would be living in Pacoima.
You know, and some people are like, wait, I don't understand these Comic Cons. I go, imagine you want to go to Cancun every year for a vacation because you want to go to Cancun. You love Cancun. It's great. The fans come because these Comic Cons are like
their Cancun.
They're vacations.
What a great way to look at it.
And you know what? I was doing this before I had any fame. I was going to horror movie conventions and, like, you know, trying to meet Robert Englund and all these.
There you go. And who's a lovely guy.
Yeah, he's like, I ended up doing a movie with him.
There
like,
you go.
I idolized you.
Yes, a wonderful fellow.
So I know what it's like to be a fan. I am a fan.
I am a fan.
I am.
I write letters to actors that wow me.
Who wows you?
Michelle Dockery, who was Mary in Downton Abbey.
Right.
Is on a new show on TNT, maybe. And it is called Good Behavior. Last year was the first year. Incredible. John Turturro.
I love John.
I wrote him a letter.
And that's
John Lithgow in The Crown.
What do you say in this letter?
Is it
an elaborate letter?
It's an elaborate letter of what I see them doing in order to create this wonderfulness. And I say, I am moved by what you're doing.
And did they ever respond?
Sometimes.
Who's responded?
John Lithgow wrote me back.
What did he say?
John Turturro wrote me back. Michelle Dockery wrote me back.
So,
did you ever see Goliath with Billy Bob Thornton?
No.
It's on Amazon.
Oh, I've heard of it, yes, but I haven't seen it.
Well, there is Maya is an actress, and she was in Venus and Fur on Broadway. And her performance was jaw-dropping. She has a long Greek name. I don't know the last name. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I'm being disrespectful.
Look it up.
I wrote her a letter.
And she responded.
No.
That's okay. Maybe she didn't get it.
It's okay. I wrote the letter.
You're doing it for you. You're not, I mean, or for them to let them know how you feel.
Yes.
But you're not doing it for reciprocation.
I feel the need to write them a letter. I never expect to get a response.
Are you friends with anyone that you're actually a fan of? Like you were a fan before you met them and somehow you became friends? I mean, I was a fan of
yours. Bill Hader.
He thought he was hilarious. Thought he was a genius.
And then to work with him, to stand next to him, to watch him in between takes, to do scenes with him, to go with him. Working with him is like water skiing on a lake at 5 in the afternoon when the water is glass-like.
Why is that?
Because that's who he is as a man, as a person,
just very
as an artist.
Giving, very thoughtful,
yes.
And very focused.
And knows exactly what he wants. He and his partner, Alec Berg. They know exactly what they want, and they allow you in that structure to be free, and if they like your ad lib, it's in.
You auditioned for Yale Drama School.
I did.
And you improvised a Shakespearean...
Launce and the Dog.
Come on.
I did. I totally forgot it.
On the spot you...
On the spot, I just made it up and thought, well, I've screwed myself to the wall.
And you made up lyrics or words, Shakespearean words?
No,
or...
not necessarily Shakespearean words. I was never in iambic pentameter. I didn't make it up.
So it wasn't like, by the hand
knew...
on my arse.
Yeah, whatever it was. I just longed to send his dog. And he walked his dog, and he loved his dog.
And you committed.
I committed. I did.
Did you
commit.
When you walked out, did you think for a second, oh, yeah. I got this.
No.
You're like, I'm effed. They know
I
that.
I was so excited. 25 actors were asked into the program. 11 finished, and 3 were asked into the repertory theater at Yale at the theater, and I was one of those 3.
How? How does this nervous kid from high school want to be an actor and just auditions for? There had to be something
before
that.
Your answer, you just said it. Wanted. Will. If you know what you want without ambivalence... If you dream it, it is not a dream. If you will it, it is not a dream.
I feel like sometimes those dreams or those thoughts are convoluted with something that makes me think, am I doing this because I think it's probably good for me, or the perception of other people will, and so I think I, this is a bad thing, probably.
No,
it's
what, hard I'll tell you what it is. It's not bad. It's it seems normal. It
exhausting.
Sounds normal. We are. It's exhausting, and it also is a roadblock. I said without ambivalence.
I know that's what made me bring up this question.
That's right. So if you remove those thoughts because they are actually not in any way making your life better or making you a better person, you are then hurtling toward your dream.
What about doing too many things at once?
I did that and I cut them out.
How do you do that? That's what
I'm
going through now.
What do I want most?
And then everything else gets cut out, or maybe
not everything. What do I want the most? What do you want the most?
That's a question I have to really think through.
Tell me now.
I mean, personally or
no, professionally. Let's say professionally.
Oh, man, that's I you know.
What do you enjoy doing the most?
You know, I think I really do love acting.
Okay, there you go. Just stick with that.
But I do love acting when it's the right freaking project. I'm not like you or other actors who can. You're not. Well, you do great work. You do great jobs. But I sometimes wait around for the next great one.
And
instead
I say
of taking,
that you do that not because you're being true to your art. You do that because it protects you. Waiting around, what does that do for you? It frustrates you mostly. You think to yourself, you spend a lot of time thinking, but I really want to work. Why? Well, oh, that just doesn't seem right. I talked myself out of and back into more jobs than I can tell you.
I feel like I'm talking to myself in a way. Like you're
we're all the same.
Well, you're telling me things that I have experienced that I feel like I get fear. Fear.
We're all the
same. It's fear. You want to be successful, and you get an offer for a job, or you have an opportunity, and I psych myself out. I'm like no, I can't.
The hundreds of thousands of people who are listening to you on this podcast.
Sure, it's absurd.
A lot of them know exactly what we're talking about. They act, and it doesn't matter whether it's acting or being a lawyer or being a great hairdresser or whatever it is, we stop ourselves and rationalize, oh, well, it's okay. And then we don't have to face the music.
I think there's a lot of fear in there.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of fear. That
I have a lot of fear.
I think I drive myself crazy.
Yes.
To the point where sometimes I get ticks.
Yes.
Little ticks where I'm like, I want to be great at this. I'm playing music. I want to be great at this.
Yes.
I want to be a great writer.
Yes.
And I'm trying to do all these things.
Yes.
And if there's anything but greatness, I feel like a failure.
Right. And it's not
and
true.
And that's effed.
That's right. That's not true.
You went through a lot of that.
I still go through it. I get a job and I think to myself,
can I do this?
Can I do this? I can't act. What am I doing? I've forgot how to act. And I'm petrified. I went and auditioned for Bill Hader to do his show. I love this part.
Were you nervous?
Out of my mind.
Did you tell him?
I think afterwards. But when I got in that room, because of his generosity, and the generosity of Sherry Thomas, the casting person.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alec Berg came in, and Sherry's partner came in, and they were so supportive that I soared.
Isn't that something? When someone who... that.
But I almost wet myself in the hallway.
You could have easily bombed as opposed to
I could have
soaring.
Easily walked
out. If they weren't
out.
As... If they didn't embrace you as
That's
much.
That's right. Oh, my God. I did an audition for a movie, and I was so bad. It was for the casting people who did Night Shift. I have known them that long. I almost gave up the profession on that afternoon when I left that.
When was this?
I would have to say, let's say, within the last 5 years.
You went in there, and you crumbled.
I crumbled.
Something happened. Did you walk? You know that clammy feeling you get? Anxious feeling?
I don't remember any of that. I crumbled.
Did you go to your car? Do you remember almost crying?
Almost.
Did you call your wife?
No.
How do you deal with it?
Bill Shatner had an office in that same complex. His assistant came out and said, Mr. Shatner would like to say hello to you. I said, I'm not in the mood. Mr. Shatner would like, just come in for a minute, would like to say hello to you. I don't know him that well. I went in, I told him what happened, and he literally talked me back to life.
What did he say? What did William Shatner say to Henry Winkler?
In the grand scheme of things, it's just fine.
Ultimately, it's like, this is life. You're going to fail. You know, my therapist says that to me. Michael, you just need to fail.
Right.
I go, listen, when I do stand-up comedy, I wanted to try it. So I did 6 months. I threw up.
Yeah.
I would throw up before I went
on. Well, you have more courage than I do. That's a really difficult job.
It was the hardest in the world.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and says, great.
Yeah.
I go, what do you mean great? I threw up. I feel like shit.
Yeah.
I'm actually crap. I have explosive diarrhea. Mm-hmm. Not to be too graphic.
No, but you were.
But I was, what, graphic?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was very graphic. I shouldn't have said explosive or diarrhea. It wasn't necessary.
Well, one or the other.
Yes. But the point is, I was so nervous. And then I went out, and afterwards I felt great. I don't understand why, if I feel great on stage and I feel great after, why do I have to feel like shit before?
I experienced that. I public speak all over the country. And I would get nervous and think, oh my God, this particular crowd is going to be the one that doesn't want to hear a word I say. They're not interested in what I have to say. And I would do this every speech. And it was as organic the 50th time as it was the first time. Until one day I said to myself, who the hell do you think you are? You know what you're doing and you know what you're going to say. And you know you get laughs. So just shut up and do the speech. I never look back.
How long did that take you? And how old were you when that moment?
Oh, I was, let me tell you that I was in my 50s.
Well, you just finally said, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let this get the best of me. I know what I'm doing.
That it's a lie to let it get the best of me, because the fact is I am successful at it. The people enjoy what I say. So what is this other thing? Do you think you need to be scared to be good? And I went, no, I don't. And I literally turned the light switch back on at that moment, walked up on the stage and gave the speech.
And you've never...
I've never looked back.
You ripped the rearview mirror off. You're done with that.
I'm done with that.
Still acting.
I still get scared.
You still get scared. What year was it when your first break was what?
Being asked as a student into the repertory company at Yale, right. That was a break.
That was one of three people.
That was big. I made $173 a week. I was there for a year and a half. I then got a $10 raise, and I went to the
arena.
That's
like $18.
Yes. I went to the arena stage in Washington, a great repertory theater. Within 3 weeks, I was fired. James Woods, Michael Tucker, Jill Eikenberry, Stephen Collins, Chris Guest, and Maureen Anderman, all in the cast. Moon Children was the play.
And you were fired.
I was fired. I cried all the way back, driving all the way back to New York. I thought, who is going to hire an actor who has been fired?
And how old are you?
I am now 22, 23.
I would have jumped off a roof at 22. I would have jumped off a roof.
I did commercials. I earned a good living doing commercials for television. Everybody would say, you know, I don't know how you could do commercials. It goes against our aesthetic grain. And then the next question was, how do you get them? Because I worked in front of a camera. I made a living. I didn't have to be a waiter at night. I could do plays for free.
Right.
It was amazing.
Especially nowadays. Everybody's doing commercials. Right. Everybody wants to do commercials, campaigns, whatever.
Right.
TV.
Right.
So then I want to get to Happy Days, and we're going to go through it. But
I then got on a plane in 1973, September 18th, 2:45 in the afternoon. I landed in Los Angeles. 2 weeks later, I auditioned for Happy Days.
What'd you wear to the audition?
I don't remember.
Was it a leather jacket?
No, it was not. I didn't have a leather jacket. I just had hair down to my shoulders.
Did you do the voice?
I did the voice.
So you went in there with long hair. And yeah.
An attitude.
You acted cool. You were going against the grain.
I had six lines.
What were they?
I don't know. I think it was, hey, next time, Richie, let me do the talking. I think that was one of them.
Wow.
Yeah. And I walked out of the room.
Forgot about it. Said, that's done. I'm like,
I didn't know. I was called back. I re-auditioned, but this time they dressed me as the Fonz. They plucked my unibrow, which was painful because, did I have a lot of brow.
I have back hair.
Yeah.
A lot of back hair?
Yeah. No kidding.
It's a Jewish thing, I think.
Yeah. I don't.
You don't have back hair?
No.
So it's not a Jewish thing.
Well, you know what? It might be a Jewish thing on your side.
Maybe.
Do you know? Your genes.
Yeah, my dad has some hair on his back. There I think if I didn't trim it the first time, it wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah, it comes like a beard. Yeah.
Like a beard.
Yeah.
So you got called back. They dressed you like the Fonz.
They dressed me as the Fonz. They put on makeup. They did my hair.
Right. Bruce. Did you read with anybody?
Pasquale. A guy named Pasquale.
Right.
I did it again. And this time I did it for Michael Eisner and Barry Diller. They were both at ABC. They went on to run Paramount. And then Michael Eisner went on to run Disney. And Barry Diller went on to run the world.
This wasn't for a lead role either. This was for
Six lines.
This was for a one episode?
A recurring.
A recurring.
Which means if you did 12 episodes, you were in 7.
So you're doing Happy Days, and this is years before you got married. This is 73, 74?
Yes. When you're on television, people don't know you. They think you're the character. Cher called me up on the phone and invited me to her famous roller skating parties that she would have in the 70s.
Right.
And spoke like Henry, and she said, you're not the Fonz.
Come on.
You're a good actor. I said, thank you.
Did you go to the roller skating party?
I didn't because out of fear, I thought, oh, my God, I will be very nervous in front of all those celebrities.
I feel the same way around celebrities a lot of times. Yeah. I'm friends with people, but I always feel like I don't belong.
Yeah. I you know who I love meeting? Music stars.
Who's your favorite?
I love Bruno Mars. I love Lord.
Fantastic. Well, you're modern. You're more current than I am.
I love Sia.
I couldn't get past the 90s.
I love Mumford & Son.
Wow. MGMT.
You know who I love? Do you know Fun?
Yes.
Yeah. Jack Antonoff.
What's the big Bleachers? Fun song?
We Are Young.
Tonight.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. So, well, Jack Antonoff wrote a lot of those songs.
Right.
And now he has a whole thing called Bleachers. It's a one-man band, actually.
Wow.
And he's on tour.
Do you like 70s Southern rock mixed in with 90s?
Like who?
That's just kind of what our band plays, The Sandwich.
Oh, The Sandwich.
We're called The Sandwich.
I'll buy The Sandwich.
Well, I mean, we have nothing to buy.
Oh.
But maybe but one what, day.
So name some people that you like.
I mean, I'm like an oldie. I like, you know, the Carole Kings, the Carly Simons, the Joni Mitchells, the Doors, Hendrix, into like Pearl Jam and the Wallflowers and Bob Dylan and all like all over the from the 60s to like Little Anthony and the Imperials.
I like Little Anthony and the Imperials.
So all over. And every once in a while I'll hear a song today that I'll like.
Del Shannon.
My Little Runaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I walk alone, I wonder.
I listened to that on my Emerson clock radio in 1959-60 in my room in Manhattan.
Wow.
Yeah.
He felt alive.
Gray plastic. I love that song.
Were you lying in your bed just looking up dreams of becoming
it
something?
It touched me.
It did?
Yeah.
So anyway, you had fun. Did a girl ever ask a weird thing? Like, hey, will you wear the jacket?
Everybody asks me if I have the jacket, will I wear the jacket?
I'm talking about during sex, Henry.
Oh, no.
Hey, will you put on this? Will you put on the accent? Will you give me a thumbs up? Will you do something? Any weirdness?
I'm sure. I don't remember.
Did you probably do it? Did you probably give in?
I don't know. You know, at the time, I wanted to separate myself.
Of course.
So I didn't realize that this was a craziness in me. But I would say to everybody, you know, I'm not the Fonz. I'm Henry. Rather than just shutting up.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. It's eventually you said, what am I doing?
You know what? Yes.
Better than being called, hey, asshole, right?
Right.
That's what it is.
It was stupid.
But how many seasons did you do? You did 10?
10.
And when did you become top billing?
I think maybe season 4.
Now, that was a negotiation. Your agent said, I want him top billing.
No, I think my lawyer.
Most Your lawyer.
Lawyer, yeah.
Were the other cast members
Skip
upset?
Skip Brittenham III. Well, let me just say that I never flaunted any of that.
Yeah, you don't seem like a guy who would flaunt.
No. Ron Howard was the star of the show, and I always treated him in that way, and he was like my younger brother.
Right. So there's no ego. No one ever said anything. Chachi didn't walk in one day and say, hey, all of a sudden this guy's the top. Nothing like that was ever said.
Or they didn't ever said it to my face.
Right. And it was a good family, like a good, you guys
great.
All got along.
We played softball together all over the world.
I remember that. I remember seeing that.
We played charades on Saturday nights.
You actually hung out.
Yeah.
I didn't hang out with a lot of the cast.
We were a really tight family.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And there was no real problems on set, no arguments.
No.
It was just that simple.
The only argument was, this is not working. I need to redo the scene. Brian Levant, could you rewrite?
Right.
Yeah. Babalu Mandel.
And they were fine like that. Fine with that.
They were not only fine, they rewrote it brilliantly.
This is such a blast.
Yeah, me too.
Are you having fun?
I'm getting tired.
Are you getting tired?
Yeah.
We'll wrap this up.
We've talked a lot.
What are you most proud of?
The books. Hank Zipser, The World's Greatest Underachiever. And the second series, Here's Hank.
And do you write the books with Lynn?
With Lynn Oliver. I just left there. We are writing the very last Here's Hank ever. And we've almost finished chapter 6.
And this is the last one?
The last one.
These are just some quick questions.
Go ahead.
From fans.
And truly?
This is it. Yeah, these are. I looked online.
Okay.
My sister did.
Yeah.
I mean my assistant.
Assistant.
Brandon McCarty, 13. You could just, this quick, you've been asked this
Go ahead.
Question, 13. How difficult was it for you to shed his bad boy sex symbol persona for dramatic and full out comedy roles?
You never shed a memorable role. It just doesn't happen. What you do is, you embrace it and you go on. And if you are good at what you do, if you train to be good at what you do, and you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, eventually you just all of a sudden build another segment of your reputation.
Old school underscore Pappy, was that really your ass on Waterboy, or was it a stand-in?
It was
ass?
A stand-in.
You would not show your ass?
No, it's not that. It's his ass was tighter than mine. He was in the lighting. He was on the lighting crew.
You wanted a tighter ass?
They wanted a tighter
they
ass.
They wanted a tighter ass. They wanted. I bet your ass is just fine. I always consider you a mentor.
Yeah.
Someone who I met. Someone who's kept in touch. Like you said, we don't see each other.
Right.
We don't talk all the time.
Right.
We absolutely did.
Conversation.
We really did. And I remember one time, I regret this. I have a lot of regrets in life, and I'm trying to stop that. But you asked me to go fly fishing with you.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go.
Right.
And I felt like that was...
No, that was not fly fishing. That was salmon fishing.
Salmon fishing.
North of Vancouver. Because one of the greatest things about being a celebrity, honest to God, is that I don't have to stand online to go into watch a movie. Number two.
What do you mean you don't have to stand
online? Well, I can buy
a stand in line.
I can buy a ticket and I can say to the manager, could I come inside and I will wait quietly. You don't have to worry. I'll sit in my seat while they clean around me, but I will take a lot of pictures outside. Now, so that's number one. Number two is that I have been asked in the past to go on these fly fishing adventures where they outfit you. They fly you to New Zealand or to Montana.
Oh, yeah.
You can take your son. You can take your wife. And you fly fish
you
for
get
10
to do all
days.
These things. What, do you think you'll ever ask me again to go fishing with you?
No.
Never?
Well, I'm not asked.
You're not asked anymore?
No.
That's kind of run its course?
Well, it just I haven't been asked. Maybe it'll come again.
I love you, Henry. I really appreciate you allowing me to be inside of you today.
I just want to say, if anybody out there, if the million or so people that are listening they're going to be on this podcast, get a really good map, because this house is hard to find.
Let's not give the address.
No.
Oh, by the way, is it weird that I'm going to ask you to sign my Fonz doll?
No, that would be a pleasure.
Really?
Yeah.
You won't get mad?
Is not it weird at all. That- and he's wearing his garage uniform.
Yeah. It's the only one I have. I bought it years ago.
His jumpsuit.
Yeah.
I like that.
You're a mensch. You're a good man, Henry.
Yeah,
can I call Michael. You for advice anytime?
Keep it to a minimum.
Minimum. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you, Henry Winkler.
Thank you for asking me to be on.
I really, really enjoyed this.
Me too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.